How many of you like writing checks? Big checks. Like, what is the biggest check you've ever written? A house? A car? Maybe buying a business? That can be kind of scary. You know, when you start adding extra zeros on there, at least for me, my hands start shaking. I don't have the fear that the check is going to bounce because we've always managed our money well, and the money's always been there before we spent it. But it can be a pretty intimidating thing to write a check for $70,000 or $100,000. Now, I want you to think about this. Imagine a 17-year-old who's earning maybe a part-time job, maybe earning $400 a month. Okay? Is that pretty reasonable? $400 a month? Okay. And next year, when they turn 18, you tell them, you say, sit down, Johnny, I want to tell you a story. You're earning $400 a month right now. Next year, you're going to sign a contract and agree to pay back between $60,000 and $100,000 to Freddie Mac, whoever he is. He doesn't know who Freddie Mac is, but you're going to sign a contract next year. Are you ready for that? How many years did it take you before you wrote the biggest check you ever wrote? How much life experience did you have before you wrote that huge check? And what we're asking a lot of students to do is to take 12 and a half times their earnings in a year, earning $4,800 a year. You want to have them sign a contract for 12 and a half times their earnings when they're 18 years old. That's like somebody who runs a $50,000 a year household taking on a contract for $625,000 with no experience. See, what we're talking about is that we're talking about preparing our kids for a major expense. Listen, college expenses are going up like crazy. I don't have to tell you that, but I am going to share some of this. Okay, we talked about houses, cars, I skipped the slide, and the $100,000 decision. But watch this. This is how college expenses have increased compared to regular expenses. A dozen eggs in 1975 cost 75 cents, $1.30 now, 168% increase. A gallon of gas, 57 cents in 1975, $3.50 now, 614% increase. But jump down to what colleges. I went to Arizona State University on a scholarship. At the time, in-state tuition was...
Do you want to raise this?
No, I'm sorry. In-state tuition was $600 a month. It is now $10,000, and that's cheap, but you can imagine that tuition across the country has gone up that much in 30-some years. Tuition goes up quickly. The reason this is important is because a Harris poll recently said that 60% of college students are borrowing money to go to college. It's very, very easy to borrow money. You don't need a job. You don't need a credit history. And they will loan you $60,000. 75% of college freshmen, now watch this, 75% of college freshmen have no idea what they're going to do with their college education. That's Princeton Review statistics. And 55% of students changed their major at least once during that time in college. Now think about this. You're making a contract for this huge amount of money, but you don't know why you're borrowing it or what you're going to do. That's not good money sense.
Okay, in 2012, 2.2 million adults 60 years and older, have student loans or have co-signed for them for their kids, three times more than in 2005. Back when we were first married, a financial planner told us we needed to put aside $200 a month, and in 18 years, we'd have $43,000, and we'd have enough money to send our kids to college.
One kid.
We were living on $13,000 a year. We had to save up 4 months to go out to dinner once. Do you think we had $200 a month to put aside for college? Not a chance. And so basically what we said was, you know, we're going to be faithful stewards to what the money that we do have, and we're going to trust that as the time gets here, that if we invest in our kids, somehow we'll figure out a way. There'll be a way for them to get to college. So we help them navigate, and we're going to talk about that as we go along. There's three other ways parents have funded college that we've heard about. There's the full ride, where they pay for all the college, and we knew a man.
That's called the joy ride.
The joy ride. A man named Jody, and he had saved money for his kids in a college fund. And when they were 18, They have different structures for this now, but back then, when they were 18, whatever you put aside for college just got handed to them. And one son went and
He went to school.
He went to school.
And got his degree and graduated. And that was fine.
And the other son, finish that story.
He bought a really nice car and had a great time, didn't go to school. Because the dad had not set it up where there were some strings attached, like any scholarship has, you know, where you have to get certain grades, you have to do certain things to get there.
Okay, then we talked to a TV host one time, and he said something very interesting. What he did was he funded his child's first year of education, 100%, because it's a whole new environment, a whole new kind of living. But he told his kids every year that support was going to shrink. So the second year, he'd fund it 75%. The third year, he'd fund it 50%. And the fourth year, he would only give them 25% toward their college education. You know, every one of his kids completed college, and they figured out a way how to supplement. Most of them got scholarships by that last year and were flying right. Okay, so one of the first questions we need to ask is, college the right choice? I know you're all in here, and it's like the normal thing to do. But is it really the right choice? College graduates, no question, have higher earning potential. They have lower unemployment. But college is not a guarantee. It's not. 50% of college graduates are not using their degrees. 15%, this is just a random hilarious
statistic.
I know,
but it's funny.
15% of U.S. cab drivers have a college degree.
Now, this gets even crazier, is when we do media spots, you know, we used to drive our own car to the airport, use our gas, and we finally realized that these big networks, they have all kinds of money and they chauffeur people everywhere, so we asked them to provide a driver. Without fail, every one of the drivers for these transportation companies, they have college degrees, they've been business owners, they're engineers, and they're from a foreign country living here in the U.S. driving a limo. It's crazy that they aren't using their degrees, and I don't know why, but it's just amazing to me.
Not every kid is cut out for book learning, so going through some testing can really, really help determine if that's the right direction for you. Some kids are more mechanical-minded, and they would do well as a plumber or an AC or a tech guy, an electrician, and those are very respectable trades. They earn very good money. So just keep that in mind as you're figuring out what you should do. Apprenticeship or trade school. Nurses need a two-year degree and they can earn $65,000 a year. Construction supervisors, a high school degree. Of course, it takes years in the business, but they can earn $59,000 a year. Electricians, $49,000. AC techs, $43,000, and on and on and on it goes.
All of these careers are honorable things. And so what we're saying is we as parents really need to know our kids and know their bent, their gifting, and help them help them guide them to the career they should go into. So possibly in high school, if you see that your son or your daughter is more mechanically minded, they start interning at different places to test their aptitude and test their desire. Because college is not necessarily the best and only choice.
Watch out for expensive specialty schools. In our area, they have this graphic design school. And I don't know what that costs, but it is like through the roof, and
it was about $30,000 for 1 year.
And it doesn't get you any more skills than going to ASU and taking that there. Our son at one point wanted to go to this audio recording school because a lot of his friends had done that. So he and Steve went down there to visit with the counselor, and they happened to have a waiting list, but they were sure they could get John in. And so when they were going through the whole spiel for the school, it was going to be
$13,000 for 9 months.
And Steve said, well, what about scholarships or aid? And the guy punched in a few numbers and said, okay, well, we can give you $2,000. And Steve said, you're going to have to work much harder than that if you want us to come to this school. And then Steve kind of probed a little bit more and said, well, what? You know, we live in Arizona, so, you know, what kind of really high-paying audio recording jobs can you get once you graduate from this school? And the guy said, oh, well, you'd have to go to the big cities like L.A. and Chicago and New York. And Steve said, well, what if John doesn't want to leave Arizona?
I think John asked that question.
Yeah, what are his options? And he said, well, we have some of our best equipment at the biggest churches around the city. And I think then you said, well, name some of those big churches. And one of them was the church John already worked at and already learned and used the equipment
on. They said, they have the best equipment.
So, and John's like, I already know how to use that. And so he said, why do I need to go to this school for 9 months?
Now, the reason he ended up there was because one of his friends had gone and said, oh, you ought to go. You know, you'll get an internship. He was earning, as a 23-year-old, almost $50,000 a year, working sound and lighting in a large church. Now he works for a big AV company, travels all over the country, and does shows for major corporations. So let's get into some, we're into super practical, okay? So we want to give you tips so that you can help your kids. One of them is, I'm backing up to whether they should go to school. Know your child's strengths. Investigate their interests with them. Talk to friends and relatives. Have them meet people in various fields before they ever commit to going to college. You don't want to waste a year. A year, it could be $30,000. Visit the schools. Go on field trips. Talk to counselors. Meet the deans of the departments. We did this with our son who wanted to go into criminal justice. We took him up to Northern Arizona University. He met the guy. The guy was a genius. But John finally realized he'd rather do sound and lighting than go get the four-year degree in criminal justice. And be involved in their groups, clubs. Have them be involved in 4-H groups, scouts, other things. Be involved with them. Have them test out their desires in those things. Because being a money-smart parent and coach could save 4 years of frustration and $30,000. So building a resume, that's where we want to go next. Because, you know, now schools, when you apply to them, they're looking for more than just education. They're looking for leadership. They're looking for community service. And we need to help our kids do that. So we looked at College Board, which they run the SATs, and they had a statistic that said that less than 30% of students pay full price for tuition. So when you look at the tuition price on a school, realize that very few people pay list price. And there's always discounts, always scholarships. The way to get those scholarships, though, is to be prepared for them. So you look for leadership opportunities. And so we looked at clubs that our kids could be in, helping them build their resume. And we did, our youngest daughter did 4-H. As a matter of fact, today she's up at a 4-H leadership camp. She's one of the leaders. This is her last year she can go because she's 19 now. And she has learned a ton, and it looks great on her resume. Three of our sons did Boy Scouts, Eagle Scouts.
They're all Eagle Scouts.
Right, all three of them are Eagle Scouts. If they go into any type of civil service, it bumps them up one pay grade for the rest of their life, being an Eagle Scout. And it looks great on the resume.
A lot of homeschoolers in our area have done YMCA Youth in Government. I don't know if you all have that out here, but that looks real good. Junior Achievement, our other clubs. And then we've done Explorers. It's a program through Scouts. And there's different legs of that program where you can test out different areas that your kids might be interested in. And, of course, Junior ROTC. And, of course, don't forget the honor societies. They look really, really good on your kids' resumes. There's the National Society of High School Scholars, and fees can be waived for that organization.
We were contacted by that for Abby, and we thought, this doesn't look right. This looks like a scam. We investigated it. It turned out to be true.
Legitimate.
And when we called them, they said, well, if your income is below this level, you can get the fee waived.
Okay, and then Community College Phi Theta Kappa, our kids have all done some community college classes, and when you get to a certain level and you have a certain GPA, they can qualify for that. It's a one-time lifetime fee, and it opens up more scholarships for them. And the National Honor Society. So there's a lot out there that your kids can be involved in. Also, Steve talked about volunteering earlier, and like our daughter Becky at one point thought she might want to be a veterinarian, so she volunteered at a vet's office for like 6 to 9 months, and she said, Mom, I just don't want to be a vet. More than half their time is spent spaying and neutering, and I just don't think that's exciting. I just really don't want to do this. I said, okay, that's legitimate. She also volunteered at a thrift store that benefited an adoption agency in our area. And as a result of that, her resume looked so good, she got hired at Barnes & Noble right away, immediately upon filling out her job application. And Roy, our son Roy, did Air Force Explorers, and for a while he volunteered. He played trumpet and bugle, and he volunteered for a while at our Veterans Cemetery playing
taps
at the funerals for veterans. and that was a real neat experience for him. So there's a lot of volunteer opportunities out there. They may not be conventional, but check them out anyway. Figure out what your kids are interested in and do them. They look great. When you're filling out college applications, when you're talking to college admissions, and on their resumes. Community service is another great thing that colleges are actually looking for, leadership and community service. And our kids have been able to do that, of course, through Scouts and 4-H and through our church. But also, there's a program out there called Congressional Award. Do you guys know what that is? Oh, my gosh, I can't believe how many people don't know about this. Okay, it's congressionalaward.org, and it's a program that our oldest daughter, Becky, did. It takes about 2 years to get to the highest level. There's like 6 levels. The bottom 3 are certificates, and the top 3 are medals. And you have to, by the time you get to the end of it, you have to do like 200 hours of physical fitness, 200 hours of personal development, 400 hours of community service, and I think a 1 week expedition or exploration. And
you get a sponsor, which can be a neighbor or somebody who checks off the child's progress, and then you send in reports to Washington, D.C. And by the time you get to the gold medal level, which you put that on your resume, Congressional Award, gold medal recipient, nobody knows what the heck it is,
but
it's impressive.
Great.
and we ended up in Washington, D.C. for a ceremony
where Becky got awarded that medal. And when you get to the 3 medal levels, your U.S. congressman is supposed to, your state, you know, is, you go down to the Capitol and they give out the medals, and it's absolutely awesome. Mm-hmm. And it's minimal fees. So if you have not heard about it, I would definitely check into that. Our daughter Abby has volunteered at a gym in our area, an outdoor gym that is free to the public. Our kids, you can look into food banks, hospitals, nursing homes, all that stuff. Work with your church youth group. All of those things are really important. You may not think they are, but they are. And make sure you put them down. So be involved. The other thing we've done is we were involved as leaders with our kids' clubs whenever they were doing stuff. But I wasn't like the treasurer where I had to do responsibilities on a weekly basis, like for my daughter's 4-H club. I was the person that did the once-a-year fundraiser garage sale, that kind of a thing. Surprised? Not really. Okay. Small investments yield big returns. So just remember, even though the 4-H club was like about $120 a year for dues, and the Scouts maybe cost $300 a year, Congressional Award, I think, was $80 total from start to finish, it was totally worth it to get these things on our kids.
And it yielded tens of thousands of dollars in scholarships.
Right.
This microphone.
Okay. The next thing I want to talk about is higher test scores. You guys are all aware of how important the SAT is, and if you're not, then we probably need to talk about that this morning, which is what I'm going to do. Our son Joe was filling out paperwork to go to a small private Christian college near us and had studied for the SAT, but not real hard, and took it once. And because he was a homeschooler, there was a little bit of discrimination, but the admissions people said, look, if you can raise your score 50 points in this one area, you will qualify for 3,000 more scholarship dollars. So what did he do? This was his senior year of high school. He said, I'm taking that SAT again. Because the way the SAT works is it keeps your highest scores in every area. So if you take it a second time, say you do worse in English, but you do better in math, it always keeps your highest scores on record. It's awesome. And there's some... There are some resources online down there. Can you all see those? Number2.com, learningexpresslibrary.com, where you can actually practice taking the SATs, and they're free. And you can do it over and over.
Learning Express was available free to us through our library. I don't know how it is out here, but just check it out. This Learning Express has more than just SAT. It has ACT. It has GRE. It has all kinds mm-hmm. of other tests, even civil service exams on it.
So Joe studied, took that SAT that second time, and then he had to wait like 3 weeks to get the results or whatever it was. And that morning, the morning he knew he could get them, he logged on about 3 times and he did it wrong 3 times. He was so nervous waiting for his scores. He finally got his scores that morning. He came in, he said, "Mom, I increased my scores 160 points. We jumped up and down. Yay! You know, you qualified for $3,000 more in scholarship money, which meant for 18 hours worth of time, he earned $166 per hour.
Just for studying.
Was that worth it? You bet it was. Okay, I kind of...
So another place to go, important place to go, if you've taken the SAT, is go to collegeboard.org. Look at the SAT dates and plan ahead. You want to give your student as much time as possible. Now, know this. A lot of homeschool families, because we're one income, will be lower income, not poor, but lower income. And the SAT is available, or has fee waivers available for lower income families, and they have a fee table that will show you what the discount, what the income level you need to have is and what the discount is. And what we had to do was we had to go to our high school and get one of their fee waivers.
And we had to meet with an advisor.
They were not happy to give them away, believe me. But we knew that it was right. We knew that they should do it. We knew that our tax dollars were going there, and they had a right to give it to us. So we got it. It also gives you the right to get free applications into colleges if you get the fee waiver from SAT. So just know if your income is tight, there are ways to get things for free that don't really cost. Okay, let's talk about getting on the college cash safari. And I'm going to go really quick on this. We looked at scholarship applications as a part-time job for our kids, and we encouraged them. And the awesome thing was they got excited when the money started rolling in. The first time when our oldest son, John, was starting out college, we spent time at the library with the College Blue Book. It was huge. It was confusing. It wasn't fun. Now everything is online. If you watch the video we just showed, Abby just spouted off these websites. We'll give you those in a little bit. And they're also on our website at moneysmartfamily.com/heave. We'll have a college fact sheet up there. It'll probably be up tomorrow. But go there, and it'll have a list of all the websites. The first place to start for college scholarships is FAFSA. How many of you heard of FAFSA? Okay, you know that you have to first get a PIN number. The PIN can take 2 days to a week to get. So the first thing we tell people is go get your PIN number first. Go to FAFSA website, fafsa.edu.gov. Look for the PIN. Get the PIN first. Then start filling out the application. It's going to take about 4 hours for you to fill out a FAFSA. You need your tax returns. You need your students' tax returns. You need bank account information, not the bank numbers, but amount of money in the bank account. Now, there are some tricks we need to share with you. First off, it's first come, first serve for federal money. So get the application in early. January is a good time. If you can't get your taxes done then, just get it done as soon as possible.
But don't despair, because we knew we were working with some college kids. They had not done FAFSA. They were in the field of education. They waited till August to fill out FAFSA. They still got buku money because of the field that they were going into. So it's never too late. It's just better if you know in advance. And every year, like, we try to have our taxes done by the beginning of February, and we're on FAFSA as soon as possible.
Okay. There are certain rules that go with FAFSA, and they're going to look at your base year, the first year your student is in school, and look at your income and determine what your family contribution can be. There's ways you can play this game so that you can end up getting more money for your kids, and that would be to reduce your family contribution by going to a more expensive school, because the higher the expense the school is, the lower, and the income difference creates a lower expected family contribution. The federal method for FAFSA does not count your home equity. There are private scholarships. The institutional method does. So if you're going for a school, is my mic cutting out?
It is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know if we're losing the recording. If you go to a school that uses the institutional method and your home equity counts, you're kind of not going to get as much money. But if you go to a school and most of them don't take it, the FAFSAs don't count home equity, you can have as much equity in your home as possible. If you go to the other kind, sometimes paying down your home loan, though, or paying down debt and taking money out of your savings account, reducing the amount of money you have in savings, will increase the amount of money your student can get for scholarships. Another thing to remember is that the student's money counts more against them. What they have earned, what they have saved, counts more against them as scholarship money as parents' money does. So if your student has $10,000 in the bank and you put that money, like, for instance, my dad gave our kids $5,000 scholarships. If we left the money in their names, they got about $1,000 less in scholarship. So what we did is we put that in our name. It counted less. They got more money.
The other thing you can do is update FAFSA. So if you fill it out initially and then you use money, I think if you use money, like say your student is buying a car that summer before school, you are allowed to go in and update your FAFSA with how much money is in your accounts, or say you have some expenses coming up and you know that they're coming up between February and August, but your money is being, you know, your money in February is higher, but you know there'll be expenses coming that you have to pull out of your pocket. You can go in and redo FAFSA before August, and it'll adjust things.
Okay. Another thing is, don't do this over the phone. When you're dealing with a college, go face-to-face, meet with one financial aid person. Get to know them. Bake them cookies. Bring them banana bread. They will be your friends. We did this at the community college with our kids because we put five kids through the community college, and Mercy was our favorite person. And Annette baked her banana bread every Christmas, and she would call us with scholarships. And our kids did this when they went to four-year schools, and Joe actually worked in the financial aid office or the accounting office, and June would call and say, Joe, this bank just opened up this scholarship. Go apply for it. So it's amazing when you make friends, what happens?
We'll just keep going. Okay.
I'm going to jiggle. Other tips.
Consider CLEP testing. Have any of you heard of CLEP testing? CLEP testing is amazing. I wish I had known about that when my oldest was first starting. And I think the way it works is you study. There's CLEP testing study books. You can get them from the library, or I think there's some online stuff as well. And if you pass the CLEP test by 50%, all you need is 50%. You get college credit for that. So that's a great way to get basics out of the way. Consider things like military academies, National Guard, ROTC programs. Those all can help pay for college if you would be fine with making a military commitment. There are work-study opportunities on a lot of campuses. They have special dollars devoted for work-study, so your kids can work a part-time job while they're going to school. And once again, those are given out on a first-come, first-served basis. So the earlier you do your FAFSA and the earlier you check off work-study, the better your chances are of getting that.
Apply to be an RA. Kids can get free room and board. Now, Abby, our daughter, was accepted as an RA, but then she said, you know what, I'm living at home. This really isn't going to add anything to my life, and it's going to increase my responsibilities, so she actually turned it down. But it can be an incredible thing if your student is going away to school.
Right. Early enrollment scholarships.
Oh, those are incredible.
Our kids, because they registered almost a year before their classes started, they gave them an extra bonus for early registration. Some schools will do that. Some schools don't have that.
And working part-time, some companies, like a company like Michael's,
Michael's Arts and Crafts will
pay scholarship money to a student who's taking business classes or classes that will work towards their employment.
Our niece Emily works for Sunrise Preschool. She's a single mom. She's a welfare mom. We're trying to reach out to her kids. And she said that Sunrise Preschool, where she works right now, will pay 90% of college tuition. So that is huge. So look for places like that, and maybe employment and college may be a thing to do. Okay, we don't have time to go through those, but like we said, they're also on our website on a fact sheet, but those are tons of scholarship opportunities.
But just for people listening on tape, FastWeb, College Board, scholarships.com, those are a few, and go get the fact sheet on our website.
And Ben Kaplan has a book called Scholarship Scouting Report, also How to Go to College Almost for Free, and they are excellent resources. And once again, we believe the libraries have those, so you can check those out. Okay, how we started our kids in college. Homeschoolers have lots of options for preparing our kids for college. We started our kids at the community colleges. We liked them. It was a great opportunity. We talked about this earlier in our Real Kids for the Real World, where we wanted to expose our kids to the society that we live in, but we wanted to do it while they were still living in our house and we could walk alongside them and navigate them. So we started our kids at community college classes, just one or two classes per semester. We found the great teachers. By the time we got through five kids, the teachers were actually asking Abby, who was our youngest, "Are there any more?" And she said, "No, I'm the last one." And so they really got to know our family, and they were really awesome, some of the teachers that we found. And our kids went into college then, four-year university, having 30 college credits under their belt, which cuts at least a semester off, if not more. Okay, let's see. What else do I want to say? Okay, at our community college, they had a special homeschool liaison, which this gal was Liz. She was wonderful to work with. We'd go in. She actually became like family by the time we got to the fifth kid. And what we did is we focused on some of the core curriculum, like the math classes, the English classes, the humanities, that kind of stuff, to get those out of the way so they could kind of dive into their major when they first got to the four-year college.
And they're also more likely to be picked up by every university. But just know that when you do transfer, there's going to be some negotiating. And just because a college enrollment person says that class won't transfer, we don't take no for an answer. We always negotiate. We bring in the syllabuses or syllabi, and we work through that stuff. And you would not believe how many classes we got accepted that initially were denied.
There's also something out there called RateMyProfessors.com where it has like the teachers at the different schools, and it'll talk about how they're rated as far as
knowledge of the subject,
knowledge
enthusiasm.
Of the subject. And see, we don't always necessarily pick the easiest teacher. That's not the goal. The goal is to pick a teacher who's good at teaching. So I don't mind, you know, we never minded, our kids never minded if they had work to do, but is this a teacher that can communicate their subject clearly and communicate their expectations to the students clearly, loved what they were teaching, and could ignite an enthusiasm in our kids for that subject.
One other thing we did, and this is for moms and dads, when you have daughters and you put them into a community college setting when they're 15, 16, 17 years old, we need to protect them. We need to protect all our kids, but what I did because of the flexibility of our schedule is I would go and I would sit in one of the computer labs and write our books, work on campus, and our kids knew that I was there. And it kind of provided this protection, this knowledge that it was safe, and there were a couple times that guys would start to hit on our daughters, and they'd say, "Well, if you want to talk to me, you need to talk to my dad." Ended it right there. It was good. But you know, just being a presence. Remember, they're young. And we're sending them out into the world. We don't want to be foolish.
And they're predators, so you need to actually talk to your kids about this. Seriously. I mean, even at work, our daughters know they're going to get hit on by guys, and what they need to do when that happens is they need to go over to one of the male employees, usually the assistant managers are older, and they just kind of just walk over and stand next to them, and they all know. I mean, the guys now at their store know that this is an issue, and they really protect all the girls that work there. But they won't do that if they don't know what's going on, so you need to make sure they know that it's happening.
So just to recap this section, how we started our kids is that by starting them off in the community college, it qualified them for huge amounts of scholarships. It cut a year off of their college education, which saved them even more money. So it pays good all the way around.
Plus, when we went to the universities and they saw that our kids had that many college credits, it gave them the confidence that as homeschoolers, our kids could do the coursework at a college level and do well. Because they all graduated with, you know, they completed their college classes with very high GPAs. So I know there is some bias today in colleges toward homeschool students, and so we need to prove to them that our kids can handle that, and our kids need to prove that.
Okay, let's get real practical. Textbooks. This was mentioned in the video, but we don't ever pay retail price for textbooks. Textbooks can cost you up to $900 a semester. So by being smarter about how you buy them, you could save over the course of a college career probably $5,000 or $6,000. That's big money. So what we always do is we go into the bookstore and get the ISBN number off the books that are required reading for that semester. And then we go and we start checking online. We'll check half.com, Amazon, eBay, cheapest textbooks. There are options out there to rent textbooks, and that can be a savings too, but you just need to do your researching. And know this, that the best time to sell textbooks is immediately after the semester ends. Just tell your kids to go back to the bookstore and see if they can sell them in. Now, some bookstores will have rules that if you didn't buy them there, you can't sell them. Others will take them. You need to know the rules on your campus and just move fast because I hate textbooks. They're always revising them. And so what you have this semester may not be sellable next semester. Get rid of it as quickly as possible unless they want to keep the books.
Yeah, I was going to say, some of our kids' classes, they were like, their science classes, they were like, I love these. I want to keep these. And so I'm like, fine. But economics and history and stuff like that, we sold back.
If you have a student going into business, international editions of the books are being sold. They're printed in Singapore and Hong Kong. They're printed by the same companies here, but they just print them overseas with soft covers and black and white covers. And even with shipping, we're getting them for $20 to $30 instead of $150 to $200. So it's an amazing thing. But here's one thing that's really key. You can do all this preparation. You can get your student into school inexpensively, but if you don't teach them to manage money before they get to school, this can be a disaster. We call this, in our 550-500 rule, the $5,000 stage. This is the credit card bailout stage, and a lot of parents think that sending their child to school with a credit card is teaching them budgeting, and that's not the right thing. So before they go to school, you need to help them learn some type of money management system, and we talk about it in this book, and we also talk about it in our first book, America's Cheapest Family Gets You Right on the Money. Teaching them to manage money is critical, but there's several ways you can do it, practical ways, like getting them an account at envelopes.com and parent and child share it. And then you put money in the account and you can watch how they're spending it. And we're letting the leash out, but we're being careful with it. Another way is to use prepaid debit cards, cash cards. And you know, you say, okay, I'm giving you $500 a month for spending money. And when that's gone, you know, you're done. So you need to be careful and learn how to manage it. And don't bail them out, though. They've got to learn. Another option is... I missed
one. Did you
do this one? Yep, I did. Prepaid debit cards. Okay, let's talk about lodging really quick. All kinds of options there, but, you know, our preference would be that our kids would live with a family. Because family life is real life. Living on your own, the single life, is an aberration for a very short amount of time. And we think a lot, especially our boys, can get really off track if they get in with the wrong crowd.
And we also, at least for the first couple of years, encourage our kids to live at home and go to a local college, a four-year university. It's cheaper. And we figured they save $6,000 a year in lodging costs just by living at home and commuting. So think about that. I can see the point where they need to maybe be on campus, experience that independence, experience that campus life. But if you can... I don't know. You're going to have to weigh that all with your kids, but I have found that to be better once, especially if your kids have no college class experience. It might be best for them to live at home and get the academics under their belt before they have that whole environment, party environment around them. Just a consideration. Some places have apartments near the campus, on the campus, where they can live year-round. RAs are another consideration, but they're for older kids.
Right. So just it's one of those research projects that you're going to have to help your student work through. And remember, they're 17, 18 years old, and we're sending them out into the adult world. They need some coaching because they can make some really serious mistakes. We had one friend whose daughter signed a lease for an apartment at the college and didn't realize that she'd have to pay for it through the summer. It was a problem. Yeah, well, let's talk about real life. You know, you sign a lease, you got to read the details, but that kind of thing happens. So we want to help them get through it without getting burned. Okay, let's talk about student loans. Look, 60% of students use loans. We already talked about that. We need to help them get through this. The average student, let's talk about averages, come out of school with about $30,000 worth of debt. It takes them 11 years to pay it off, and their starting salary will be about $27,000. We get emails all the time from families saying, you know, we've been married 20 years, we just paid off our student loans, and now our kids are ready to go to school. What are we going to do? So we've got, on the fact sheet that we're putting up on our website, there's a bunch of info on the different types of loans. You need to help educate your student about those because everyone has different rules. And we just heard in the news this week, did you hear the thing about the Stafford loans? that the rate is increasing as of July 1st from 3% up to 6%? Yeah. Things are changing. These are big contracts, and there's big costs associated with them. I want to tell you a story. Let's talk about an average student. Let's say that he graduates with $22,700 worth of loans and a car loan for $10,000, so he's got $32,700, and he meets his sweetheart, the girl of his dreams, the one that God's called them to marry, and she has the exact same average life experience. Together, they have $65,400 worth of debt. That, if they had an average income of $27,000 a year each, and they worked together earning $54,000 a year, they would have 16% of their income going to debt payments. That is not a positive thing. And then they're going to want to go buy a home or have some children. Do you see how the recipe can really spiral towards disaster? And that's what we call the $50,000 stage. That's when parents are called to help bail their kids out of these decisions. So we want to help prevent that. We can't stop them, but we can definitely educate them and help them not be average. We want them to be above average. So here's let's just wrap up with loans. Signing up an uninitiated, uninformed, unemployed 18-year-old for $40,000 to $60,000 worth of loans is not leading or training them. It's throwing them to the wolves. Remember that student loans are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. Student loan default rates are watched very carefully. We have a friend who defaulted on a student loan years ago. He started back a repayment process. Now, default means you haven't paid for, I think it's 4 months. Okay? They sent him to collections. He started paying on it. He's paying on it regularly. He works as an IT person. He was given the opportunity to double his pay by working for an educational institution in IT. He got the job. Then they did a background check. Found out that he defaulted on a loan. He did not get the job, but he'd already resigned from the first one. It follows you. These are dangerous things our kids do not know because most of them aren't reading the fine print. Parents don't know it, and nobody's going to tell them. This is serious stuff.
There are so many scholarships out there. Yes, it will take time. Yes, it will take effort. But if you are faithful to go and uncover those rocks, you are going to find them for your kids and rejoice with them. I can't tell you how many times we have cried or jumped up and down when a letter has come in the mail or an email has showed up and another scholarship has been granted. When Becky graduated community college, we paid her $1,800. That was leftover scholarship money from stuff she had earned. Joe, at this point in time, is going to school for free. Every time he hears about a scholarship, he fills it out. He actually had his old admissions counselor, because he doesn't have an admissions counselor anymore since he's a semester away from graduating. She emailed him because she knew how much he liked to write up and send away for scholarships. She said, Joe, we have this scholarship. Here's the link. Apply for it. We don't have enough people asking for this scholarship.
Can you believe it?
I mean, so once you make friends with the people at the school and they know you will take this seriously, they will help you.
And that, you know, that's not an unusual situation because our son John was at community college, and this was probably 10 years before, and he went in to apply for a scholarship that had a baseline GPA of 3.2.
No. First it was 3.7, and he had just under that. He had like 3.65. And I said, John, when you go in to hand in your scholarship packet, ask them about that, because that seems kind of high to me. And so he did, and the gal told him, oh, we dropped the GPA on that. We couldn't get enough people applying for that with the qualified GPA. So we dropped the GPA to 3.2. He applied for it.
Got it.
He got it.
And he wrote a thank you note. I'll tell you, it pays off. Okay, instead, if you follow what we've talked about, and really there's so much more that we could have shared with you, but the point is, instead of writing colossal checks, which really parents shouldn't be doing because we want to release our kids to do this on their own, instead of writing colossal checks, you're going to hear incredible things like Joe said to us, Mom and Dad, I don't want you to pay a penny for my college education. And by God's grace, he's doing it. It's an amazing thing to watch. Or, like Becky said, Mom and Dad, can you write me a check for the money that you have in the bank that I earned? Those are checks we love to write. And in the end, allowing your young adult to struggle, because it is going to be a struggle, and to see God deliver them without debt will provide a financial resilience that they would never get if you funded it or you borrowed the money, which many parents are doing, to provide for them. They'll believe that no financial goal is impossible for them. And really, that's what we want to do. That's how we want to cut colossal costs. And that's how we want to grow financially independent, money-smart kids.
Okay, we have some time for questions, I think. So does anybody have any questions that they want to fire at us? Okay, go ahead. Give it to me. Okay, what's the difference between CLEP test and AB test? AP testing for college?
Well, you're talking about like
getting out of paying
right.
By testing. Right. Okay, with a CLEP test, you study at your own pace and you take the test at a testing center at the college on the college campus and you pay a fee for it. With AP testing, you have to take the class. And usually they take it either at high school or you take it at the college. So it takes longer to go through. You pay the price for the class. Or if you're in a public high school, they, depending on where you live, they will provide the testing for free. So it just depends.
Or some of them charge.
Some of them charge. You have to check it out.
Okay,
but the difference is you have to take the class with one and you kind of fast track it with the other.
There were a lot more hands. Yes. Okay, let me repeat that question.
I wanted to ask you that.
Okay, you just talked to somebody and they said that there are some universities that won't take CLEP, but that you can test out of...
Some of them will allow you to test out of some of their classes, but not all of them.
Okay. Wow. I have not heard that in our experience, at least in Arizona with the colleges around us, is that they take CLEP. So that's a new thing for me. Okay, so that's, thank you for bringing that to everybody's attention.
That's part of your research project.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, another question? Do we have
an opinion on College Plus?
An opinion on College Plus.
Do your research. We think a lot of people are using it. A lot of homeschoolers are using it. Their cost is equivalent to that of community colleges. You have to decide whether you want your child involved in interacting with other people.
This is my concern with the College Plus, and this is just us, this is our convictions. You guys have to wrestle with this yourself, but I want my kids to experience what's out there because it's evil, it's troubled, it's a mess out there. And if I try to keep them in a bubble, then when they finally do figure out what's out there, they may not know how to respond to it. I'm very concerned. If you get a chance to listen to our Real Kids for the Real World, I hope you can, because it is frightening what is out there right now, and we have a responsibility as homeschool parents to equip our kids to know how to navigate what's out there.
But that said, if they're taking online classes, but they're involved in real life activity
right.
with other people, and you're good with that, you just make it your conviction.
Right. Okay, way in the back.
At what age do your kids start looking for scholarships? How early?
What age should the kids start looking for scholarships?
Junior and senior year of high school.
Or actually, you might even be able, it depends on the scholarship, you might even be able to do it a little earlier.
Right. But FastWeb, we got a book called Education Writing Contest.
Writing Contest for Kids. This was years ago.
And we started our kids early participating, and they didn't get much, so there wasn't much payoff for them. They didn't really see the value, but it gets them prepared. And so there are scholarships out there that are not based on GPA, not based on income. They're based strictly on what you write or what you do, making a video.
And we talk about that in here. I mean, there's literally scholarships for duck calling. There's scholarships for horse associations. We heard of a scholarship in Florida for one blue eye and one brown eye. I mean, you name it, there's a scholarship out there.
There's funny ones. Like there's one where our son was in criminal justice, and there was the son of a police chief of a small Indiana town who had some money from his grandfather, his grandson of a police chief, and so he put together a $500 scholarship for anyone going into police work. And you had to write him an essay, and he made the decision.
One over here. Question.
AddAll.com.
A-D?
A-D-D.
A-D-D.
All.
A-L-L.
All together.
Thank you. Nice.
So that's for searching for textbooks.
At all, ADDALL.com for textbooks.
Go ahead.
Okay, yes.
There's not a huge differentiation. It's looking for what the colleges are looking for. And so you have to be careful because, our kids can work at church, but a lot of colleges don't view that as community service.
Right.
Yeah. So you got to watch it. But, doing Boy Scouts or doing 4-H, and, our daughter in 4-H, they did Copper for Cooperation. They raised money for
Africa.
So just help them be rounded in what they do.
Question.
With FAFSA, when do you start that
process? Their senior year.
FAFSA is the senior year of high school.
Okay.
Question. It's not a movie. It's a session we did earlier in the day.
Real kids
for the real world, and they have MP3s of it here. Okay. Any other questions?
Yes.
Okay, this is a very good point. Thank you, Lauren. She said that they had too many credits at the community college to qualify for certain scholarships. This is what we heard, okay?
And we experienced it.
If you go to the community college and you go all the way through a two-year program and get a two-year degree, you cannot be
considered a freshman.
So you have to be careful how you play the game. So seriously, there's so many credit hours that they will take. And when actually we went to this four-year private university that our two younger kids are going to now, the guidance counselor, the first admissions counselor that we talked to said, oh, no, she has too many college credits. She needs to be a sophomore, which means she gets less scholarship money.
She got $7,000 instead of $10,000.
I said, oh, no, you don't. Oh, no, you don't. And so Steve and I called and met with the head of admissions and said, we want to talk to you about this. He goes, how old is your daughter? We said, she'll be 18 in the fall. He said, she gets to be a freshman.
She could choose to come in as a sophomore if she wants, but she'll only get $7,000. So you let us know what she chooses.
Because if she comes in as a freshman, we'll give her 10. We said, we'll take the 10.
Did she graduate in 3 years?
She's still in school right now.
She just got accepted into the athletic training program, which is a very limited slot. She passed that test, and she's got about 2.5 more years to go.
Yes.
She'll graduate in about three and a half.
They won't let her. She could have graduated in 3 years, but the athletic training program is structured in such a way that they have clinicals and you're not allowed to start them before a certain time. You have to do
a
minimum of 3 years.
What it does mean.
She entered as a freshman.
Right.
Doesn't mean that she has to be there for 4 years.
No.
Correct.
But what it does mean is she can take a lighter class load.
Yes. Right.
And see, that, to me, that cuts the stress and the pressure down so they can take 12 credit hours a semester instead of 15. They can get better grades, get more scholarship money, and have a better time at college.
Can't you get scholarships as well, though?
You can,
but it's usually less than what they give the freshmen. Okay, one last question. Our kids have always worked part-time.
Going school part-time and working is an option that we encourage because...
Honestly, if they go to school part-time, they don't get all the scholarship money.
You're right.
So what we say is keep your part-time job, but cut it way back. So our kids during the school semester will work maybe 10 hours a week. So they have spending money. And they can pay for their insurance and their cell phones when they get to be college if they choose that. But you have to go full-time to get the full scholarships.
And also to be on your – no, part-time you can be on your parents' insurance. You have to have 12 credit hours.
That's full-time.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so you can still be on medical insurance with your parents. Okay, I think we need to end this for right now, but we'll stay up here. So if you have any more questions, please feel free to come up and chat with us. Thank you.